Pseudopod number 14, December 1st, 2006. Today's story, Virginia Woods by Jenny Lee Simner. Hi there, welcome to Pseudopod, the weekly horror podcast magazine. I'm your host, co-editor Mer Lafferty, and for reasons that will be painfully obvious, I'm going to keep this week's intro short. Our story this week is Virginia Woods by Jenny Lee Simner. This is Ms. Simner's second story with us. The first was the popular Drawing the Moon, read for us in October. The story is read for us by Christiana Ellis, author of the Parsec Award-nominated novel Nina Kimberly the Merciless, and head of the Pickle Tales competition going on at Podcast Pickle. Now be sure to take your vitamin C this winter, or you'll end up voiceless like Auntie Myrrh.
Virginia Woods by Jenny Lee Simner. As always, the Indians came at night. Eleanor had known they would. When she saw the fields of trampled maize, gold beneath the morning sun, she couldn't even bring herself to cry. She just stood there, staring at the broken dirt. Already it seemed that weeds were moving in, growing over the battered corn. The Indians had destroyed their crops once before this spring. They didn't have enough seed to plant again, not if they wanted to eat as well. The man set out on guard duty the night before was missing. A search party, her husband Ananias among them, had gone out to look for him. Eleanor drew her arms tightly around herself. The last guard had been found just inside the forest, his chest riddled with arrow holes. No arrows, though. The Indians must have pulled them out before leaving the body. Eleanor looked toward the edge of the field. The trampled soil gave way to grass and scrubby bushes. The bushes, in turn, gave way to dark trees. Their branches met at wild angles. Their leaves blew fitfully about. The colony was surrounded by those trees. In the morning light, their shadows stretched across the field like the claws of some wild beast. Eleanor stepped back, away from the dark shapes. Somewhere within the forest, she knew, the Indians were hiding. Only savages would hide in a place like that. The settlers had chased them off the island over and over again, but they always returned. The last time the Indians had fled, the settlers' muskets had echoed behind them. Still, the Indians had come back. The ruined crops were proof of that. With a whole continent to live upon, surely the savages could leave Roanoke Island alone. Eleanor turned and looked back toward the village. The distant houses were small and vulnerable, huddled together in a sweep of farmland. Beyond them stood the walls of Fort Raleigh. The fields closer to the houses and the fort were never damaged as badly as those further out. Perhaps they would bear enough seed that the settlers could plant again.
Mama!
Eleanor looked down to see her daughter running toward her. The girl tripped over her own short legs and fell, face first, into the mud. Eleanor hurried over and scooped her off the ground.
Virginia Dare, I told you to stay inside.
Virginia squirmed in Eleanor's arms. Soon she'd be too heavy to hold.
Didn't want to stay inside.
Virginia stuck out her lip. Her face and long shirt were covered with mud. Her hair was plastered to her forehead. Eleanor scowled, and Virginia giggled. Eleanor sighed. Nothing upset that child, and even less scared her. It was unnatural, almost. Eleanor wondered, sometimes, whether Virginia's being born on the island rather than back in London had anything to do with it. But Marjorie's boy, Hugh, had also been born here, and he was a quiet, frightened boy, always clinging to his mother's skirts. Virginia broke free of Eleanor's grip, sliding with a laugh to the ground. She ran across the field and through the grass, Eleanor close behind. The wind picked up, carrying the smell of rain. Clouds gathered over the forest. Eleanor caught up with Virginia at the edge of the woods.
"Windy trees,"
Virginia giggled, and continued forward.
"No!"
Eleanor grabbed her. Virginia squirmed, but Eleanor tightened her grip. The branches swayed wildly, green leaves bright against the gray sky. The neat, tended trees in London parks didn't have that wildness. Neither did the trees in any other civilized place Eleanor knew. But then, this wasn't a land for civilized people. It was a land for savages. What would the savages do to Virginia if she wandered into the forest? Eleanor didn't want to know. Tightening her hold on her daughter, she hurried back toward the village. By the time Eleanor got inside, rain had started to fall. It leaked through the roof, muddying the dirt floor. She dipped a rag in the wash basin, then sat on the edge of the bed and washed Virginia up. She peeled off the girl's damp shirt, scrubbed the mud off her face, ran fingers through her tangled curls. Outside, thunder rumbled. Flashes of lightning lit the gaps in the log walls.
"Bright light!" Virginia laughed.
Eleanor just kept washing the mud off. Thunderstorms scared her. They made the house seem even smaller and more vulnerable than it was. Her gaze darted around the room as she worked. A table and wobbling chairs stood against one wall, a chest of drawers against another. Battered pots hung from the ceiling. Empty jars were piled in a corner. A clothesline stretched across the room, damp clothes draped over it. Oil paintings hung from the walls. The paint had begun to flake away, and the canvas beneath was spotted with water stains. Ananias thought Eleanor was crazy to hang her father's paintings here. She stared at a painting in which tall, thick trees, oaks and cedars mostly, stood neatly side by side. Their trunks were straight, leaves set like clouds of carded wool among their branches. Sun shone among those trees, casting bright swatches of light onto the ground. All of her father's pictures were like that, bright, cheerful, unreal. Sometimes Eleanor wondered if he'd really looked around him when he painted. Then again, if he had shown the colony as it really was, with all its dirt and dark places, would she and Ananias have agreed to come here? Would anyone? Eleanor pulled a dry shirt over Virginia's head, set her down on the bed, and walked over to the painting. She ran a finger along the signature. John White, 1586. The paint fell away at her touch.
"You should have stayed with us," Eleanor whispered,
then pushed the thought fiercely aside. As governor of the colony, it made sense for her father to sail back to London for supplies. He'd return as soon as he could. After 3 years, Eleanor was one of the few settlers left who believed that. Outside, the rain let up a little. Eleanor heard voices arguing as they approached the village. Virginia tugged at her skirt.
"Want to go out?" the child said.
"No." Eleanor tried to make out what the voices were saying, but she couldn't. If she wanted to learn what had happened to the guard, she'd have to go outside. She picked Virginia up and sat her in a chair. Reaching for a thick length of yarn, she started tying the girl down. Virginia screamed,
"Don't want to be tied!"
She really was too big, but Eleanor had no choice. She couldn't leave Virginia alone otherwise, not after the way she'd run off that morning. Eleanor knotted the ends of the yarn together. Then she went out, her daughter's yells loud behind her. Within the huddle of houses was a small open space, the closest thing the settlers had to a village square. Most of them were already there, talking in small groups. Once, the square wouldn't have had enough space to hold them all. But 3 winters, without supplies from England, had taken their toll. Half the houses were empty now, their walls beginning to rot. Light rain still fell, but the wind had subsided. Eleanor hurried across the square, looking for Ananias. Off to one side, she saw a wet deerskin on the ground, with a lump beneath it that had to be a body. The guard had been found then, but not alive. How many more would the savages kill? Eleanor turned quickly away and kept walking. She found Ananias by one of the deserted houses. His hair and beard dripped rainwater. Muddy brown curls fell into his face. He argued with Manteo, while several other colonists stood around them, listening. Eleanor moved to Ananias's side.
"No wild animal did that!"
Ananias's voice was fierce. He gestured toward Manteo.
"The hole in our man's chest was made by an arrow, an Indian arrow."
Manteo shrugged. The gesture looked wrong on his wiry frame.
"I said nothing about wild animals."
His English was perfect, but his voice held an accent that flattened the words, twisting the meanings in all the wrong places. He wore the same English wool as the others, but his beardless face was too thin, his eyes and straight hair too dark. The time he'd spent in England, the fact that he'd been baptized once he returned to America, none of that mattered. He was still a savage. If it were up to Eleanor, he'd be in the woods with the other Indians, not living here in the village.
"You're the one who mentioned animals."
Manteo's dark gaze fixed on Ananias. Neither of them seemed to notice Eleanor at all.
"You said," Ananias measured each word, "that your people did not do this."
"There are things besides Indians and wild animals that can kill a man. Surely you know that by now."
"Don't complicate this with fairy stories."
Ananias' voice turned low, threatening.
"If your people did this, they won't go unpunished. If the Indians are hiding in these woods or anywhere else on the island, we'll find them. You can be sure of that."
"The Croatoan are gone."
Manteo stared at Ananias as if he expected some answer to that. Ananias ignored him. He turned to Eleanor as if seeing her for the first time.
"Why aren't you repairing the damage the savages did to our fields? It's bad enough one of us had to be away."
Eleanor looked down, away from his sharp gaze. When Ananias spoke like that, the gap in their ages felt much larger than the decade it really was.
"I wanted to see what you found."
"We found a dead man," Ananias snapped. "Did you expect any differently?"
Eleanor just shook her head.
"We'll all be dead before the spring is through."
Marjorie Harvey walked up to join them. As always, Hugh stood by his mother's side. His straight yellow hair fell neatly into place. His blue eyes were serious in his small face. Marjorie wiped a hand across her forehead.
"Our only hope is that our governor stops tarrying in England and spares some time for the colony in his care."
She cast a long look at Eleanor, as if she were to blame for all the colony's problems. Eleanor measured her words.
"My father will return as soon as he can."
Marjorie laughed at that, and Hugh echoed the sound. Then he turned away, suddenly embarrassed, and hid behind his mother. Eleanor's cheeks felt hot.
"Many things could keep a man in England. Spring storms, or lack of funds to hire a ship. A gentleman of his rank lacking funds."
Marjorie laughed again.
"It's hardly unheard of," Ananias said, his voice suddenly mild.
Whatever the others thought, he still believed that Eleanor's father meant to return. Ananias and Marjorie began discussing other reasons the governor could have been delayed. Shipwrecks. Trouble with the Spanish. Eleanor had heard all the reasons before. She watched Manteo drift away from the small group, watched as he and several settlers carried the dead man's body from the square. Hugh released his hold on his mother and walked off as well. Eleanor almost called Marjorie's attention to that, but decided against it. Hugh never went very far, after all. She began to think that Ananias was right, that it was time to start repairing the fields.
She needed to check on Virginia, too, to make certain the child had calmed down. Ananias and Marjorie were still talking when she left. She walked past them, walked past the small knots of settlers still talking throughout the square. There were a few other women, and somewhere an infant cried, though most of the colonists were men. Eleanor walked past wooden houses, some sturdy and well-kept, others crumbling into the dirt. Two chickens scratched the ground beside one house. A boy herded several sheep by another. Like all of the colony's animals, these had been brought over from England. There were no tame animals in the New World. Eleanor pushed her own door open and stepped inside. Then she stopped, stone cold, in the doorway. The chair was empty. Yarn trailed to the floor. Virginia was nowhere in sight. Eleanor slowly untangled the yarn from the chair, twisting it around her hands. How could she have been so foolish? She should have known Virginia was old enough to untie the knots herself. Behind her, the door creaked open. Eleanor turned around. Marjorie stood there, hands on hips. "Where is my boy?"
"Hugh?"
Eleanor thought he would have returned by now.
"After you left, I looked down and he was gone. He was with me until then. What have you done with him?"
"I did nothing. Virginia's gone, too." As she spoke, Eleanor felt a cold lump in her chest.
"I'd expect that from your child." Marjorie folded her arms across her chest. "Not Hugh. If they're gone, it's Virginia's fault."
Eleanor opened her mouth to say something, then closed it again. She didn't have time for idle talk. She had to find her daughter. Maybe Virginia hadn't left very long ago. Maybe she hadn't had time to get very far. Eleanor pushed past Marjorie, through the door. Marjorie followed her out. In the mud beside Eleanor's house, they found tiny footprints. The footprints led through the village and across the fields. A second set of footprints, even smaller, joined the first. Marjorie took this as proof that leaving had been Virginia's idea and that Hugh had only followed her. The footsteps continued to the edge of the field, and the grass beyond was trampled. "Windy trees," Virginia had shouted only hours ago. The rain stopped. Sun broke up the clouds, letting blue patches show through the gray. Between the trees, though, Eleanor saw only darkness. She didn't dare enter that darkness alone. She turned and ran back toward the village. Marjorie followed, but Eleanor hardly noticed her. She thought of the wet deerskin, of the guard's still body beneath it. She followed Virginia's footsteps back home, praying that this time the search party wouldn't be too late. Eleanor found Ananias beside the house, hooking an ox to the plow. She explained what had happened as quickly and calmly as she could. Ananias ran a hand through his hair, splattering water in every direction.
"You should have taken time to tie her properly instead of chattering outside."
His voice was harsh, his face taut with concern.
"I did tie her properly." Eleanor twisted her hands together. "She figured out how to untie the knots herself."
"She should have been raised to know better."
Eleanor couldn't argue with that. She wished, more than anyone, that Virginia was a tamer child.
"I'll gather a party together."
Ananias turned abruptly away, starting toward the square without another word. He gathered the searchers quickly, 12 men in all. He insisted Manteo join them.
"This way," he said. "If the Indians attack, they'll have to take one of their own, too."
The men lit the wicks on their muskets before leaving, so that they could fire on a moment's notice, assuming, of course, that the gunpowder stayed dry. Eleanor didn't ask whether she could go with the men. She simply followed. Ananias glanced back at her, his gray eyes telling her that she should return home. But so long as he didn't speak aloud, Eleanor didn't have to listen. She didn't bring a gun, though. Seeing her armed might have been enough to make Ananias send her back after all.
Marjorie also followed, but then her husband had died during the colony's first winter. There was no one to tell her what she should or shouldn't do. Manteo led the way across the trampled fields, following Virginia and Hugh's small prints. The smell of the men's sweat mixed with the smell of muddy weeds and wet wool. There should have been larger footprints, too, Eleanor realized, from the Indians who destroyed their crops last night. Or had the morning rain already washed those prints away? The men fanned out to either side of Manteo as they entered the woods. Marjorie followed close behind. For a moment, Eleanor just stood there, watching them disappear among the twisted trees. Then she hurried after them. She didn't fear those woods half as much as she feared finding Virginia's lifeless body in the mud. At first, the trees were still. No wind blew. Light shone through gaps in the forest and cast bright patches of sun onto the ground. Eleanor thought maybe she'd imagined the wild branches and deep shadows. Maybe her father had known what he'd painted after all. But the trees grew thicker and more twisted as they walked. The light thinned until it barely penetrated the leaves at all. Twilight settled early over the forest. The space between the trees was thick with bushes and vines. Eleanor's shoes kept getting tangled in the low branches. Thorns tore at her skirt. Dead leaves were everywhere, heavy with the smell of decay. Animals rustled those leaves. Eleanor shivered. Animals could attack children, too, and do as much damage as savages. The wind picked up again, shaking water from the branches. It cried with a high animal sound as it blew, at odds with the rustling Eleanor expected. Her skirt blew around her ankles, and her damp hair came loose in her face. The others slowed their pace. Whatever Eleanor felt, maybe they felt it too. All but Manteo. He continued steadily forward, as if he didn't even notice that the others had slowed down. Marjorie screamed, a high, hysterical sound. Eleanor froze. A chill ran down her spine. She saw Marjorie collapse. Several of the men raced to her side. Eleanor ran after them into a small clearing. Her foot caught on a vine and she tumbled to the ground. Scrambling to her feet, she kept running. The smell hit her first, like fresh-killed meat, heavy with blood. What she saw on the ground beside Marjorie looked like meat, too, all torn flesh and bloody tatters, bright against the grass and leaves. For a moment, Eleanor was okay. So long as it didn't look like a child, she didn't have to believe it was real. Then she saw a shredded piece of linen. Following it, she found a hand, a tiny child's hand, clutching the fabric through the blood. Eleanor's stomach rolled. She fought to keep from vomiting. The hand was too small to belong to Virginia. Eleanor felt relief, then guilt. Marjorie's child lay dead on the ground in front of her. Eleanor knelt by Marjorie, putting an arm around her shoulders to offer what comfort she could. Marjorie flinched as if touched by fire. She pushed Eleanor roughly away. "Your child did this. You would never." Marjorie's voice rose, then cracked. She leapt forward, shoving Eleanor into the brush. "You killed him!" The men pulled Marjorie away, but she kept yelling. "Your daughter killed him! He never would have come here if not for her! Never!" Eleanor sat up, staring numbly at the crying woman, at the mangled body by her side.
"You should go back now." Ananias's voice was firm, turning the words into a command. "Take Marjorie with you."
Eleanor couldn't go back, not with her own daughter still missing. She opened her mouth, searching for words that would make her husband understand. A twig snapped, close enough that Eleanor froze at the sound. Ananias whirled around, gun raised.
"Show yourself!"
The bushes in front of him rustled, a wild rhythm, not in time with the wind. But no one answered. Ananias stepped back, bracing the musket against his shoulder. The end of the wick glowed orange. The other men raised their guns, too. Manteo stared at them, his eyes wide. Then he dropped his own musket and fled into the woods. Eleanor wondered whether the other Indians waited for him. Had he already betrayed the settlers to the savages? Ananias fired into the bushes. Smoke filled the air, heavy with the smell of gunpowder. The forest went suddenly still. And Ananias fell slowly backwards, making no sound as he hit the soft earth. Eleanor screamed. Suddenly, everyone was shooting at once. Smoke burned Eleanor's eyes. The acrid smell of gunpowder clogged her throat. She buried her head in her hands, praying the savages would spare her. The shots cut off abruptly. The smoke drifted slowly away, too gentle for the noise that had made it. When it cleared, every last man had fallen. Eleanor stared at the bodies, spattered with blood, but she couldn't make herself believe they were real. Her thoughts felt as slow as the tendrils of smoke rising through the trees. She expected the Indians to come for her, too, but they didn't. There was only the wind, crying as it blew through the leaves, and Marjorie's soft sobbing. Eleanor saw Manteo's abandoned musket. She grabbed it. The musket was splattered with mud, but somehow the wick had stayed lit. Finally, Eleanor crawled to Ananias's side. There was a ragged, bleeding hole in his chest. The sword and arrow might make. Around it, his shirt was stained bright crimson. There was no arrow, though. Not in the wound and not on the ground nearby. Ananias's face held a wide, startled look, as if even now he didn't understand how he'd died. Eleanor should have started screaming again, but she just sat there, feeling strange and cold, watching her husband's blood trickle onto the dead leaves. The forest twilight deepened, but she barely noticed. Did Virginia lie on the ground somewhere, too, her skin slowly growing cold? Eleanor froze at the sound of soft footsteps behind her. Clutching the musket, she slowly stood and turned around. Manteo's dark eyes stared back at her.
"I did not think English men were so easily frightened."
His voice was even flatter than usual. "You killed them." Eleanor felt hot rage, bitter as the gunpowder that lingered in the air. "You warned your people before we ever arrived." She aimed the gun at Manteo. Manteo stepped sideways, but Eleanor followed, keeping him in range. She wanted, more than anything, to see Manteo fall the way her husband had fallen. She held her fire, though, praying that in turn the other Indians would hold theirs.
"I did nothing." Manteo's face twisted into a frown. "The Croatoan are dead. They died the same way as the English."
Eleanor braced the gun against her shoulder. How dare he deny what he had done?
"Listen."
Manteo took a deep breath, his eyes on the musket all the while.
"The men expected an attack, so they got one. That happens sometimes in these woods. I've tried to warn them, but they never listened. My people died the same way, only they feared musket shots, not arrows."
"People don't die of fear," Eleanor said. Had Manteo gone mad?
"That may be true in England, where you've cut down your forests and scrubbed clean your dark places. Not here,"
Eleanor thought of the arrows that should have littered the ground. She thought of the startled look on Ananias's face. But she knew she'd go crazy if she believed Mateo's words.
"What about our crops?"
Eleanor's voice came out higher and more frightened than she expected. Mateo shrugged, but his eyes were still on the musket.
"The crops near the forest were hit worst."
He lunged forward, reaching to grab the gun from Eleanor's hands. Eleanor pulled the trigger, praying she was fast enough. Nothing happened. The gunpowder must have gotten wet. It wouldn't ignite, no matter how long Eleanor held the trigger. Yet Manteo's hands went to his chest, as if the musket had fired after all. He tumbled, face first, to the ground. Eleanor stared at him. If she rolled him over, would she find a bloody wound in his chest? No, she told herself. People didn't die of fear, no matter what Mateo said. They died of arrows and gunshots. Yet, she still couldn't bring herself to turn Mateo's body over. The wind brushed her cheek. Had it ever stopped? It whistled through the leaves, high and sharp, crying like an animal in pain. No, not an animal. Ice trickled down Eleanor's spine. A child. Her child.
"Virginia!"
The wind continued to cry.
"Virginia, where are you?"
Eleanor started forward in the direction of the voice, then stopped when she felt herself trembling. Would she really find her daughter? Or just another mangled body, nothing human left to it? She looked past the fallen men to where Marjorie lay sobbing on the ground. Beside her, Hugh's torn body still bled. Eleanor took another step. For a moment, she wished she were like Virginia, too wild and foolish to be afraid. Too foolish to be afraid. Virginia didn't fear anything, and her body hadn't been found. The men had feared Indian arrows, and Mateo had feared the musket she held. Eleanor glanced once again at Hugh. What fear could tear a child apart like that? Eleanor didn't want to know.
"Mama?"
Virginia's voice, low and uncertain, but still very much alive. For a long moment, Eleanor stared at the dark trees. What did she expect to find when she followed her daughter's voice? She heard footsteps, too light to belong to a man, too awkward and heavy for an animal. Only a child walked like that. Eleanor shivered. The day had grown cold, and clouds had moved in once more, dimming the few ribbons of light that reached the forest floor. The light only grew fainter further in. Eleanor closed her eyes and thought of her father's painting. She thought of his bright colors, of the light between the trees. She tried to imagine the forest around her like that, green and soft, branches swaying gently to and fro. Maybe Mateo wasn't mad after all. Maybe what Eleanor found was up to her. She took a deep breath, opening her eyes once more. Then she followed her daughter's call, deeper into the woods. And she tried not to be afraid.
This has been a presentation of Pseudopod, which is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives 2.5 license. Find us online at pseudopod.org.